Welcome to the podcast that puts a finger on the pulse of medicine and technology. On this show, you'll hear from investors, industry executives, and healthcare providers on the science and business of medicine. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib, and this is the State of MedTech. Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. This time I have a surgeon who's a good friend of mine I've known for a few years, and actually somebody who I interviewed on a previous podcast that I had launched at a great company called Gentem Health, who's a tech company focused on revenue cycle management and medical billing. That podcast is called Journey to Private Practice, by the way. And my guest is Dr. Alejandro Badia. And so Dr. Badia is a hand and upper extremity orthopedic surgeon who also has a great entrepreneurial story, a very interesting business model that he started that many surgeons can really learn from and get inspired by, but also an author of a great book. Before I tell you a little bit more about him, I want to remind our listeners that if you're a clinician and you want to get a CME credit for this, you can. So thanks to our partners over at CMFI, whether you're a surgeon or an internist or a physician's assistant, look in the show notes below, click that link, and you can type in a few sentences of what you learned from this episode. And then by doing that, you unlock an AMA PRA Category 1 CME credit. And the best part is that it's free. The State of MedTech has made a decision, and I've made a decision, that we want to make all these CMFI links eligible for everybody, and it's free. So we used to charge for it, just I think $10, but we decided that what would be even cooler is that we front that money and cover the costs and make these CMEs available to anybody. So you get a free CME from this. Just make sure you click the link below and take just literally 30 seconds, type out what you learned, and that'll unlock your learning experience. So let me tell you about Dr. Alejandro Badia. So he is a physician, a surgeon in upper extremity orthopedic, treating orthopedic problems of the hand, wrist, arm, forearm, elbow, and shoulder at the Badia Hand to Shoulder Center in Doral, Florida. You can check out his website at drbadia, that's drbadia.com. And he's a really interesting background. So he completed his undergraduate at Cornell, studied physiology, got his MD at NYU, and then trained in orthopedics there as well. Then he did a hand fellowship at Allegheny General Hospital in Pittsburgh, followed by an AO trauma fellowship at Freiburg, Germany. So he runs an international and still active international hand fellowship, and he serves on the editorial board of two different hand journals. And for a decade, he organized a yearly Miami meeting for surgeons and therapists that was devoted to upper limb arthroscopy and arthroplasty. Then in 2005, he co-founded the world-renowned Miami Anatomical Research Center, or MARC, which is the world's largest surgical cadaveric training lab. He's also the founding member of the American Hand Institute, which is a think tank and a medical device startup focused primarily on minimally invasive solutions to the hand, wrist, and elbow pathology. Now, the way I found out about him is that I read his book, Healthcare from the Trenches, which is a fantastic book that, you know, does this very difficult job of simplifying how screwed up our healthcare system is. So aside from doing that, he really put a lot of work into interviewing other physicians, hospital CEOs, even patients about the healthcare system, and then provides his insights as to how we should fix it. Now, the reason why I have him on this show is because of his entrepreneurial background, because a lot of physicians know how healthcare, well, not a lot, all physicians know how healthcare is messed up, but very few take action on it. And because of his entrepreneurial tendencies, Dr. Badia just couldn't help it. So what did he do? Well, he inaugurated what's called OrthoNow, which is the first immediate orthopedic urgent care center in South Florida. And it's staffed by surgeons from the Doral Orthopedic Clinic, which is a group of surgeons from lower extremity to upper extremity and spine subspecialties that treat elective orthopedic problems in international patients. What OrthoNow does is that it's a franchise that actively engages healthcare entrepreneurs and surgeons here and abroad to open orthopedic urgent care facilities. It's a very interesting model. Because essentially what it created was a network of trusted high-tech centers that provide quality, affordable, and convenient orthopedic care for the whole family. And, you know, I checked out, you know, their app and their platform. And these are the kind of innovations that I feel will help give patients an option outside of the traditional healthcare system and health insurance. So we're going to talk about all that and more. So let's get right into the episode. So here is our interview with Dr. Alejandro Badia. And again, don't forget to claim your CME credit via CMFI. And if you love the show, hey, do me a big favor. Just take 1 second to write a quick review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Give us 5 stars. That really helps a lot. So with that being said, let's go straight to the show. Always a pleasure. Hey, this is kind of like our reunion show, except on a different podcast, right? So for our audience, you know, Dr. Alejandro Badia is a physician based down in Florida. He is an entrepreneur and someone who really takes to heart what it means to do value-based medicine, and more importantly, how to change the healthcare system. I first learned about him from his book here that I have called Healthcare from the Trenches, an insider account of complex barriers of the U.S. healthcare. From the provider's and patient's perspective, it is definitely a very well-researched book. And what I like about this, aside from Dr. Badia sharing his story and what it's like to actually go through surgical training, but also how screwed up our system is. And more importantly, what I like is that Dr. Badia went out of his way to interview other peers and patients to say, like, am I thinking about this the right way? And so I think it brings a really good summary in terms of the healthcare system, why it's screwed up, more importantly, how to fix it. But we're here today to talk about some like really controversial and interesting topics. But before we do, Dr. Badia, for our audience, can you give us a quick high level about who you are and your background?
Certainly. I start the book saying I'm a proud immigrant. So I think it's fashionable now to be an immigrant. I was born in Cuba and fled a communist country where many of my family members on my maternal side were physicians. And you know, typical immigrant story. We grew up in a working class town, Elizabeth, in New Jersey. I got there when I was a baby. And then I ended up, I was a public school kid all the way through. Ended up fortunate enough to attend Cornell, studied physiology. I was pre-med probably since I was 8 years old. And did my medical school at NYU, which is now a free medical school. Shout out to them. And I stayed sort of in an institution, particularly because of Bellevue Hospital, which is the largest city hospital in New York area, a very famous trauma center. And then did my fellowship in hand and upper extremity surgery in Pittsburgh, did a trauma fellowship in Germany, got to see what another healthcare system is like. It was a private. It was actually very, very prophetic for me. Spent a short time there. And then came to Miami because I wanted to go somewhere that I would be able to use my Spanish as an additional skill. But I like the lifestyle here, as a lot of the New Yorkers in Silicon Valley people know, with a lot of investors coming down here. And I've been in Miami now 27 years. I co-founded the Miami Hand Center, which kind of broke apart, and then started my own upper limb center with all of the components to be able to treat a patient, which is been one of my frustrations delivering healthcare is the fragmentation. If you come to my place with shoulder pain or wrist problem or an acute fracture, you can have everything done under one roof and leave with it treated. And there's a huge benefit to that. And that's what I've been doing. And I focused a lot now on international patients because Miami's kind of the gateway to the whole hemisphere. It's not just Latin America, but the Caribbean and even the snowbirds, our Canadian friends who have a socialized system and often will come down here to get more expedited care. So that has been my focus. And then I started Ortho Now, which we can talk about, Omar, mainly due to frustration. And that was about 11 years ago. Now I started Ortho Now.
Got it. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurship stems not out of like, hey, things are going really well, but usually out of like frustration and a problem or an itch that just you can't stop paying attention to. So what was that itch? What was that frustration that got you to start Ortho Now?
Yeah, what I started realizing is that everybody who came to see me as a hand surgeon had already been to at least one place. And all of those places were well-meaning, but they really didn't get the job done. Part of it is just there's so much to know now in medicine compared to even 20, 30 years ago that even though I did a full orthopedic surgery residency, when a friend or a family member asked me about back pain, I immediately defer to my spine colleague or at least pain management because there's just too much to know. So I was seeing that patients would often go to a general urgent care, maybe with a fracture, and then they'd say, oh, you have a fracture. You should go to the hospital. Patient goes to the hospital. Hospital ER physician says, yeah, you have a fracture, but then they call the orthopedist on call. The orthopedist says, you know what? I don't really do complex wrist. And they're not going to come in for that either. They're not sitting there waiting for the patient, and it doesn't make sense. So they splint the patient, and when I see the patient, it's often been I'm the fourth physician or clinician who has seen that person. And I started thinking, wow, what an incredible waste of resources, of time, of money. There's an economic component to this. And we're all complaining about the fact that healthcare is now almost 20% of our GDP. It's twice as expensive as the next country on the list, which is either Switzerland or Norway. And I thought, boy, they're just, there must be a better way. And I said, the general urgent cares are a great idea. They've been accepted by the public, but they don't have the expertise. So why not a specialty urgent care? And what we soon found is it wasn't just urgent. The number one diagnosis coming to us is right knee pain. We have extensive data analytics, and what it shows is that the patients can't access the care. So it's not that it's urgent always. It's not an emergency. It's that the person says, wow, I can use the app. I can let them know I'm on the way. They'll see me within an hour. And if it is something surgical or complex, they're going to use the app to contact the knee specialist, certainly not me. And now the patient's really getting the definitive treatment almost in real time. It's completely disruptive. And the challenge has really been navigating the barriers to innovation. And that's where I'm at now because I'm seeking to write a large strategic partner that's got the expertise, manpower, and the capital to be able to take this to not only national, but I've got colleagues in other countries waiting for this to be able to be rolled out in their cities abroad. It's a universal problem, different in different healthcare systems, but no matter what, people want efficient, expert, and cost-effective healthcare. And we're doing that at least in a musculoskeletal realm.
Yeah, and I completely hear on that. So let me put my, I guess, my venture capital hat on for a second. So when you talk about barriers to adoption, like what are the top three like key barriers to adoption that you're having right now? And is it that you need more capital to overcome those barriers? Is it the right partnerships? Like what are those two or three barriers to adoption you're facing?
Well, the first one is just awareness. So awareness amongst, say, the patient themselves, the referral sources, whether it be my primary care colleagues, the hospital ERs or schools, large employers, we're really trying to target. But to get that awareness, you need the manpower, you need business development people, you need marketing dollars. And right, I've been bootstrapping this for the last decade. So the first thing is awareness. The second one is the other barrier is the entire monolith of the insurance industry. Now, when I speak to somebody about this, it's very smart people, they say, oh, well, the insurance company should be, knocking on your door because this is much cheaper. Well, I learned that I'm not sure they really care. And that's the thing that bothers me. I think part of it is that the people we speak to don't own the insurance company, right? So they kind of care, and like just like we all care about, it's just more ethical and makes sense, but there's not a deep seated interest in changing because let's face it, they're the ones with the big shiny buildings. It's not the people actually providing the care. And getting to them means you have to know how to navigate that labyrinth. And certainly as a clinician, I don't. I mean, if I knew how to navigate that, I'd be getting paid fairly for my, outpatient shoulder replacement surgeries. So we need people on the team who can have these discussions with the insurance companies, and they'll come to see that this makes total sense. And then the bureaucracy, there's just too many middlemen, too many people making decisions between when that patient comes with, say, that wrist fracture, and me taking them to the OR and doing a 25-minute surgery. I put a little titanium plate, and they're, you know, moving their wrist again in a few weeks. That the in between there is just huge.
Yeah.
To paraphrase Scott Belsky, it's the messy middle of healthcare.
That's a great reference too. And I think the unfortunate thing about healthcare today is that, you know, for me, when I was in medical school, and even when my father was practicing as a surgeon, that wasn't even 10 years ago, it was a little bit easier just to, you know, set up a practice and then practice medicine. And the business side of the medicine was just kind of like there, and you just, you know, did what you had to do, you know. And I think a lot of surgeons, their approach or solution to when things change bureaucratically, it's just like, I'm just going to work harder. But now it's really the business of medicine. And if you don't have the dollar or leverage that, say, a Kaiser or Cleveland Clinic has, I mean, you're screwed, you know? And I think, I mean, if you want.
Yeah. I have a discussion. What's that?
No, go for it.
Yeah, no, I haven't. You mentioned Kaiser. I have a discussion next week with a former CEO who's written several books, very smart guy. And, you know, one of the nice things about writing a book, sometimes it opens some doors for these kind of dialogues, because I think most people who write a book don't write it like a Stephen King, right? You're going to sell millions of copies. We write it because we're trying to bring awareness about a certain topic. You know, there's 1.2 million books published a year, and I found out through a friend who's written a book, and I learned a lot about book writing. But one thing is, it's finally opening some doors. I've met with a number of legislators. I'd like to, you know, shout out Vern Buchanan is a congressman here from Florida, and may be the next chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is really responsible for funding healthcare. And he gets it. He absolutely understands it. So does, obviously, Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana. He's one of three physicians, Rand Paul and Barroso from Wyoming. These are the physicians in the Senate. So these are people, hopefully, who will step up and realize that it's just not sustainable what we're doing right now. It just isn't. And the waste is just unbelievable. And anybody who's been in the trenches, that's why I called the book Healthcare from the Trenches, is that you almost have to be in the trenches to understand that. You really do.
No, I completely agree. And I mean, you know, for me, just with my family, you know, my wife and I are expecting our first. And so just kind of navigating healthcare right now has been very, very interesting. Like, you know, this is the first time for me as an entrepreneur where I'm not getting my health insurance through an employer. So I had to get it on my own. And I mean, keep in mind, my father's a surgeon. I went to medical school. I've been in this industry for 10 years. And I was like, where do I do that exactly? And then I had to like Google things. I had to, you know, so I called a broker. It was extremely confusing. And at least for me, I was educated enough to know like why it might be worth me paying more right now. Cause again, we're expecting a baby, you know, but the average person doesn't know these things. Extremely complicated. And I guess if I'm incorrect about this, please correct me. You know, my experience with a value-based care model more or less has been when I was with Kaiser, because the one reason why I liked Kaiser so much, I was actually willing to pay when I was with my employer, pay more just to go with Kaiser, because everything was done through the app. It was extremely streamlined, very easy, standardized. That's it. It was not, there's no confusion about it at all. The moment I moved away from that kind of model,
a great model.
Yeah. But the moment I moved, and this is why I kind of was very interested in Ortho Now, because when the moment I moved away from that model, I ended up with Anthem, a huge, huge, huge company. I couldn't see, like, I'm paying for this. I couldn't see a specialist for like a month or two within a 100-mile radius. And then I checked, I'm like, okay, well, who takes online appointments? Out of like thousands of physicians, it was like two or three. Like, it was absolute, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Wow. And so
This is what I'm saying about the lack of engagement. So you mentioned Anthem. I mean, I'll just, you know, hopefully
this,
they'll call
this
me.
This is the podcast to just let it loose, man.
I hope they're somebody's listening. The problem is, even if they are, I honestly don't think they'd care. I have a neighbor on one of the islands that I was befriending, who's bigwig what United Healthcare and his wife is, and it's just nothing changed. It was just the most amazing thing. I still haven't gotten him to come and even look at the OrthoNow model. I mean, I said, I'll drive you there. Well, let's have a cup of coffee. I want to pick your brain because, you know, these are people who really, you know, have a lot of knowledge, right? But it's just the lack of interest is there. A colleague of mine that I trained with is an orthopedic surgeon who's no longer, surprise, surprise, no longer doing clinical medicine, right? And his company was basically brought on to help them lower costs of the ER, because the ER is a big drain for
huge drain
for Blue Cross, for Anthem. And I remember I sounded like a fifth grader. I said to my friend, I go, duh. And I said that because he had reached out to me because he knew about OrthoNow. He'd read about it on LinkedIn. And I said, you know, this is what I've been trying to tell you. The question is, why doesn't Anthem? I mean, he brought this to them. Do you think I ever had a conversation with them? I mean, they say they wanted lower costs of emergency room visits, of orthopedic related issues. No dialogue. So this is the problem, is we have this escalating cost of healthcare, but the parties aren't willing to really engage and have a conversation. And that's really unfortunate. I mean, short of a hip fracture or femur fracture or complex spinal injury, I mean, most things nowadays can be taken care of in an ambulatory basis. Now, of course, the hospitals don't want that, but even the hospitals, the smarter hospitals, are realizing they're putting resources into more outpatient care because it is more cost effective. But yet in my city more. In Doral, where we're located, it's only 50,000 people. One of the big healthcare systems just opened yet another hospital. I mean, you can drive.
What's the point?
You can drive 15 more minutes to go to existing hospitals that aren't full. I mean, now, yes, we have the pandemic, but this hospital was planned well before the pandemic. So this is what's happening. And yet I can't even get my own city to really engage with us so that to see like their own municipal employees, where we would save them time and money. It's we're just stuck in the same old, same old. And I'm not sure what it's going to take for disruption. I think it's going to take one of these big retailers. You know, Amazon tried, but they didn't, you know, they ended up hiring a very smart guy, an author. But, you know, he comes from an ivory tower medical institution.
That's right. Yeah, they're little, the one that they do is Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway, right?
Yeah,
and it was just JP funny because like,
yeah.
Yeah, and JP Morgan. And I was going to say, I was like, that should tell you everything about this industry, which is like, you have the biggest behemoths when it comes to business. You have Amazon, you have Berkshire Hathaway, you have JP Morgan, like you have a bank involved. And what was it, a year or two in, they were just like, yeah, we're going to throw the towel in on this one.
Yeah, they
you know?
Well, again,
it's really
I don't
demoralizing.
Think, I just don't think they really, again, spoke to enough people in the trenches. You got to get some community pediatricians in there, family practice physicians, certain subspecialists to say, what can we really do? They have 1.2 million employees. So their goal initially was to provide better healthcare for their own employees. So that was a chance to really incubate that model and then bring it to the larger. And I'm potentially going to be in some discussion, some pretty big company. I'm hoping we'll see the vision. But up until now, I mean, it's been a real challenge.
So just walk me through, let's just say, so like, I'm actually a perfect use case for this. So, you know, I do jujitsu, and then like a month ago, I did something stupid. I don't know what it was. I think it was when I was lifting, but like something in my rotator cuff is off, you know? Right. So gave it some rest, took ibuprofen, you know, did some stretching, everything. It's still, there's still something there. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the hell to do. Like, and personally, I'm turned off by the idea of like, okay, I need to go see a primary care. I got to schedule time. I got to go see them. They got to refer me to a specialist. That person's going to refer me to imaging maybe. Like, for all these things, I'm just like, screw it. I don't want to do it. So, but as a patient, if I were to use the OrthoNow app, like, what does that workflow look like?
Well, I'll walk you through, examples that came in today. One that came in, an hour ago, a patient of mine knew about ortho now, and his daughter's 11 years old, was playing tennis and hit a backhand the wrong way in sudden pain where she could barely even pick up the racket. So, of course, you know, the first thing they're thinking, well, can it be a fracture? Now, as a specialist, I know that's highly unlikely because she didn't have a fall. So it's probably some soft tissue injury. But what they did is they go to the app and they hit. Actually, I have a message now from a clinician. So what happened is that they notified Ortho Now, the location that was, you know, fairly close to them. They notify them by the red on my way now button. They can estimate what time they'll be there. They can tell them what the problem is, wrist pain with tennis, happen to be a friend of Dr. Medea's. And then they can call an Uber or a Lyft. Now she's 11 years old, so parents took her, but if you hurt yourself on a soccer field, right, you might not be able to drive. You can call Uber or Lyft in our app, and then you get there, and within an hour, you're gonna be seen. You're gonna have a physical exam by somebody who actually knows about your shoulder pain, right? He really understands it. They're not gonna see COVID symptoms or belly pain. And then if there's any question, they're gonna send a copy of that imaging study, which is done in the same building. In this case, it was just a plain x-ray, just to rule out anything unusual. And I saw that and agreed it was, it was normal. And then we came up with a treatment plan, you know, all what I would do to text message a friend. I mean, that quickly, right? As a subspecialist, I don't need to be there seeing everybody who comes in with wrist pain, but at least I am accessible if that the more general orthopedic person, you know, needs a subspecialist. And we have the same thing for foot and ankle and knee and spine, shoulder. And in your case, they would do an exam. If they thought our physical exam wasn't that impressive, certainly we'd get a plain x-ray. We always do. We live in a medical legal world, so we have to get a plain x-ray. Maybe you have an occult, you know, bony tumor there, right? So we'd have to just make sure. But most shoulder problems are soft tissue. So if your pain was either severe enough, or Omar, you'd been taking, say, you know, you're a smart guy, you say, I'm gonna take some NSAIDs, avoid lifting for a few weeks. And if after all of that, you're still not better, then we have the MRI right downstairs in the same building. You'd get the MRI, you'd go up to Ortho Now, they'd send me that image, and I'd say, okay, some bursitis, he probably just needs an injection and maybe a little bit of rehab. Or maybe something called Ortho Laser, which is a cold laser that we're about to collaborate on. So there's, or
that's
maybe
just, Scott Sigmund, right?
Yeah, or, yeah, with Scotty Sigmund, yeah. Or maybe platelet-rich plasma, or something more concentrated. I happen to use CTM. It's connected tissue matrix. It comes off the shelf. I use that all the time. I inject the shoulder. I'm not harming them like cortisone, you know, can have detrimental effects. But all of a sudden, you see you're getting this range of possible treatment options by people who are expert in this. And then the last step is, okay, the MRI showed, say you had a big rotator cuff tear. Then I will be speaking to you about an arthroscopic repair, which we would do down the hall, outpatient. Oh, and then you do your therapy afterwards in the same building.
Very nice. And the whole point, you know, I think I may have figured something out here, that the whole point of this in terms of what's this, why would an insurance company care for this, is that versus, again, taking me for the same example, I would end up going to a primary care, get referred. And so eventually I end up going and visiting different types of physicians. And probably by the second or third or maybe fourth visit, I end up seeing the specialist that I need. And your model is that people are consumers. They're educating themselves about all these other decisions. If we give the consumer basic information to identify what the hell the problem is, they can navigate where they should go and why and how better than, let's say, going through the system, because the system is just broken right now. And the system, while it's trying to go to value-based care, it's still fee for service. So people are like, hell yeah, let's just, like, you know, send this person here. I'll go over there. Right.
You know, well, I love these buzzwords. I mean, value-based. I mean, I've heard people say that, and I said, okay, well, let's have a discussion about the value we're bringing in musculoskeletal, right? And it's not because this is mine and I started it. There are orthopedic urgent care, or I prefer to say walk-in care, because it's not always urgent. Your shoulder pain isn't necessarily urgent, right? You've had it for a few weeks. So
that's right.
But what's urgent is that, you know, people are busy now and they don't want to spend, you know, days in this labyrinth, which has a certain cost. So that's why we use social media a lot. So if you can follow us at OrthoNow on both Instagram and Facebook. And then my own practice, Badia Hand, I have my own. Unfortunately, I can't even give my personal because I got hacked. So if anybody from Facebook is listening, please, I need a human being to help me with this. I need the two-factor authentication to prove it's me.
Let me ask you something about OrthoNow. So what about, because this is another area where I think people, they shy away from trying to do it on their own, which is whether they're in network or out of network. Is there a way for a patient to figure out whether in network or out of network before they come see you guys at OrthoNow? Like, how does that work?
Look, OrthoNow is in network, and I wish I could say all of them. It's some of them we just have trouble having a dialogue with, or it takes months and months to get. We do the paperwork, and 6 months later, we're still. I mean, this is unbelievable. Even though it's good for the insurance company,
I'll tell you, that's nothing pisses me off more. And again, I'm not a surgeon, but it pisses me off that surgeons like yourself are killing yourself like within the procedure room. And you're going to get paid in net 30, 60, 90 days. But then the people who are providing your hardware and everything, they're going to get paid that day.
Yeah, no, that's
right.
Don't get me started.
No offense to my no offense to the medical reps there. Yeah, no offense to the med reps out there, but it's just like it is what it is. So like sometimes when your surgeon's in a really shitty mood, like that's part of the reason why. It's nothing against you, right?
Yeah, you know? it's incredible. But the insurance company, so in network and out of network. So here's the deal. The problem is, The insurance companies hold up this little carrot and say, we'll send you a lot of patients if you're in network, but you realize how hard you're working because what you get paid for each of those things that you actually do and you actually do something, right? I say in my book, like, I'm sorry, but you know, Mr. Insurance Company, you're not really fixing that wrist fracture. You know, I'm doing it. Okay. So I think the public has to decide where the value is. But I will tell you, they're so used to thinking that the insurance company is really going to just take care of it that most people will not go out of network. So my practice, I've been out of network for about 8 years because I got tired, frankly, Omar, being paid crap. And a lot of the good physicians are. So, I mean, in New York, a lot of my colleagues, they don't even take out of network. It's cash. And then they'll give you your forms and then you apply for reimbursement. But, you know, good luck with that, right?
Seriously. And I figured like there's something big happening because I remember 5 or 6 years ago when I was in spine, I started to see spine surgeons just say, we're just cash based. And I was like, spine surgeons are. Yeah, that's crazy. That is wild. That is really expensive. Yeah. But they're doing perfectly fine in business. Do you feel like that's the future of healthcare here in America, which is like, we'll have insurance for like big things. But then for the most part, the public is educated about like I'm a big fan of like of healthcare HSA the savings account where it's and then just putting money aside. It's like, okay, like when I have to go to the doctor for a checkup or something, this is the money that I use and I don't deal with insurance companies, and that way you have like a low premium deductible. Or
but Omar, I will tell you, even on a micro level, my own team, and we are, you know, my now I'm not talking about OrthoNow, my Badia hand to shoulder practice, I'm solo. Hopefully I'm bringing on a new colleague. I'll be speaking to him next week, but I've been solo for 13 years, which is unusual, but I can tell you,
yeah, it's very unusual.
Even my own, exactly. And I have, you know, 8 or 9, you know, mouths to feed. We have a staff. I mean, I'm very proud of the practice. We're like a family, but I can tell you when I spoke to the team about not using insurance and just putting a fund where when they got to bring their kid to the pediatrician or they're going to the OBGYN or their family practice doctor, when I go to mine, who's on the 5th floor, the same building, I'd rather just pay. And then you have insurance for catastrophic. Now, obviously, the premiums have to be much lower. And that's the big challenge. But I think that we are going to move that way. And I think that the millennials, when little by little, they're going to, you know, their whole life is going to be in this little rectangular object that I think we will go to that. I have 2 full-time employees who do billing and collection. I mean, you know, and they have full.
That's crazy.
So think about that.
Yeah. This
You
is
know,
the
at
only
some point, I
business in the
may
world
go
that's like
completely
that.
cash, but you know, I know I understand that people, you know, pay a lot and their employers pay a lot for insurance. So I try to work at least if they have a lot of network benefits. But a lot of people choose not to come with me. And that's the other thing with the public. I talk about this. The public has some responsibility. You know, we seem to have no problem paying some one of the guys here in Miami Dolphins getting paid, you know, I think $30 million a year to be a cornerback. 16 games a year. Oh no, now it's 17. I mean, come on, as a society, we have to wake up and say, well, okay, I don't mind that they're paid a lot because they're good at what they do, but $30 million when a pediatrician might make 150,000, you know, there's something
It's ridiculous.
wrong.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. And like for me personally, like I have a I'm very passionate about helping physicians. And you know, if there's ways that I could help physicians just make as much money as possible, I'm totally okay with that. I mean, I don't know why, like for some reason it's taboo in society to see a physician with like a multi-million dollar house and like a nice car and everything, but like, other people, like whether it's athletes or musicians, that's okay. And I don't know why that is. I don't know why when it became taboo, you know.
Well,
But
that's in chapter 11, the money of physicians and money and the Great Divide, I think the chapter's called. It's the second to last chapter, and I think a lot of people will be surprised. You know, when I tell my lawyer friends or something that you know Medicare pays somebody, well, they keep slashing it. It's supposed to go down like 9% on average in January. But I think you get $1,700 to do a hip replacement. Now, what the public doesn't know is that includes the global period. And you know about that, Omar. That's 90 days. So once you do that hip replacement, if grandma has some complications or she stays in the hospital, that hip surgeon's got to visit her hospital, write a note, right? Because he has to write a note in the chart document that he's following her. All of that's included. You know, that driving to the hospital, parking, getting out, right, seeing her, writing a note, and if there's a complication, that's included. I mean, this is people are just do not really understand, but they'll pay thousands for you know, a Botox shot for aesthetics.
yeah.
You know, I'm in Miami, so I see this all the time. But in the end of the day, I mean, I have two young children, and the important thing is that they do what really gratifies them, and you know I love what I do, but there are challenges, and I'm hoping that to help in one small humble way to help improve that.
In an ideal situation, like let's just say that you find, let's say, the right partner. Let's just say something happens. Your team figures some things out, and Ortho now you have a lot of app downloads. You'll have a lot of people using the app, and they are obviously coming in. You know, they're paying out of pocket, right? So, as a
Well,
physician and
not
entrepreneur, like what
necessarily. I
leverage
mean,
does that give you? No. Oh, let's just. Oh, so even if they come, they can be like in network too. So, but my point is that let's just say that you have you. One of the problems you mentioned or to barriers of adoption is like the patients, right? So let's just say that within the Miami area, like a lot of people download, they just start using this all the time. Does that give you some kind of leverage? Like, what can you do with that? I mean, aside from the obvious thing, which is just grow and expand Ortho now.
Well, we can show how cost effective that is, particularly to big employers who are buying this insurance. I mean, I'm a small employer, and I can tell you it just came up, and we just changed insurance companies because of the cost. If we can show what the cost is of managing the majority of these orthopedic issues, I mean, that little 11-year-old who just came in with wrist pain. I mean, you realize what we saved the family and the entire healthcare system? Normally, they would have gone to an excellent hospital, Miami Children's Hospital, but you know, this little girl didn't have a head injury. She doesn't have, you know, a 104 fever. I mean, her wrist hurts a little bit because she hit a backhand wrong. So the family, you know, parents just want to know, is there something really wrong with the wrist? And frankly, there might be, but we already screened anything real obvious, and we're doing conservative treatment, and she'll probably be fine within a week. With a minor, you know, grade 2 sprain of the extrinsic ligaments of a radial carpal joint. You know, to put it in English, that's just a mild wrist sprain. But that wrist sprain typically will go to either the children's or general urgent care, where honestly, they kind of call everything a sprain unless it's an obvious fracture. And then that whole pattern starts because they don't really know where to go from there. You see? And the reality is maybe it's not a sprain. Maybe it's a grade 4 scapholunate ligament tear. And I'm able to diagnose that right away and then get the appropriate treatment. So there's a huge economic and time savings there. And time is money in our society. And people value Absolutely. Their time now, you know, post-pandemic, even if it's not just more time for work, more time for play. Who wants to spend all night in an emergency room?
That's right. Forget that it's a little girl. Yeah. If it was an older person, right, and this is just gets delayed even by a few weeks, like it gets worse, which means it gets more expensive to fix, right?
And if it's an older person, let's face it, well before the pandemic, you know, we had something called MRSA, right? So there's a lot of hospital acquired infections. I mean, if you go to a hospital, it's because you're sick. And I say that in my chapter about hospitals. I mean, obviously we need them, but you don't need a hospital for an ankle sprain or for a back.
Yeah.
Right. And that's true. That's what we have to move towards. But there are a lot of people, you know, who stand, you know, their perception is they stand to lose rather than just adapting. I mean, think about what happened with ride sharing. I mean, taxis aren't out of business. You know, sometimes I love to, you know, I get to an airport, taxis right there. I don't even want to wait. And now their prices have come down. Right. And the ride share has gone up. So now the taxi's cheaper. At least for me, when I go to LaGuardia, because I'm going to be starting to practice in New York again, I'm about to get my license. That's another nice piece of news. But
congrats.
I go to LaGuardia. And so these are all changes. And healthcare has to change. I mean, it just has to change because it's not sustainable the way it is.
No, it definitely isn't. And what I was gonna mention is that, like, in, you know, so not to put you on the spot, but again, feel free. Like I said, this is the episode where I was just like, dude, just take the gloves off and just like have at it. But obviously, for your clinic, and especially you're a surgeon and you're dealing with the hand, you deal with industry, so you have device, you have implants, everything. Have you received any kind of help or support from the companies that you work with that provide the implants and you know, biologics or anything else that you guys use there? Have they been in any help at all, even with patient education events?
No, some of them have been more, you know, I actually bring that to them for the most part. I'm actually very forward thinking about patient education and it helps them. Some of them are very receptive to that. I do a procedure for the base of the thumb arthritis, very common, and it's a titanium prosthesis. And American surgeons are very reluctant to do that for a number of reasons. And in Europe, I travel a lot. My European colleagues love these type of surgeries, and I've been doing them for a long, long time now. So patient education is key, and referral source. Now Do they pay me something? No. I mean, if I go lecture about this, they might cover my costs. But we don't. I wouldn't say we necessarily get help from them. In fact, it's the opposite. There's these sunshine laws came into existence to really almost, in some cases, like not even, you know, allow us to them to take us out to a nice dinner while you know the bankers are you know been doing this since the beginning of
funny how that works, right?
Yeah. So
funny how that works.
You know, the physicians, and but again, that's partly our fault because if it was up to me, as physicians, I think collectively we'd say no. No, we're not. This is absurd. You know, there's nothing wrong with when you know we're learning or we're sharing ideas to have a nice meal and a bottle of wine. There is nothing wrong.
Yeah, and I hate to say, and this is why, again, like I really gravitated towards your book. And of course, you know, in terms of you and your mission for healthcare is that, you know, no offense to my father and his generation, but like, and they didn't know any better, I guess, but 10, 20, 30 years ago, like no physician, I would say 0.001% actually cared about the healthcare or the business. Most people, especially, I'll just use surgeons as an example. Most surgeons, they want to go to the OR, they want to do surgery, and that's it. They just want to focus on the art and the craft. And as a result of that, a lot of the business of medicine was left alone by physicians because they're like, I don't want to deal with it. I'm just going to, I'll bill. And, back then you can get away with that. But when you leave responsibility out on the table, guess who comes in? Business people and lawyers. And right now that's who's primarily driving healthcare. And my biggest concern is with my generation and generation below it, most of these people who are coming out of residency and fellowship, they're so demoralized that they just go and get employed by a hospital, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But the moment you do that, become an employee, you check in and check out, you don't give a shit about changing the healthcare system or anything. And so there's like fewer and fewer people like you trying to actually push change,
Well,
and so that's my concern. But
what
hopefully
I've
with
been
the,
told is
yeah.
you have to prove it in the private practice model, and then we talk to legislators. I mean, I have a horror story from somebody who, met with in California, met with they met with Nancy Pelosi, and she just tore up a plan that physicians and nurses actually had put
She
together.
likes tearing things, doesn't she? She likes tearing
Yeah,
things.
yeah. So, I mean, right now is not a good time. And I don't want to bring politics into this because it's irrelevant. I just think that we're not. I don't think we're going to see a lot of change in healthcare delivery, with the current administration, other than making it more bureaucratic, which is what happened to Obamacare. Although some good things happened, right? I mean, pre-existing conditions. There were some good things, no question about it. But it ended up driving the cost of care up. And if you ask most doctors, actually, what is Obamacare? We don't really understand it. It's so there are some good things, but it certainly didn't make healthcare more efficient. If you want healthcare costs to go down, you simply need to minimize the middlemen and the inefficiencies, because that's where you save money. You don't say, oh, I'm going to pay the doctors less, or you're gonna not allow this or that test. I mean, in the end, we demand excellent healthcare, so we don't want to ration it. But if we just provided it in a smarter fashion, the cost will go down. And then I always say this: then there's so much money left over for the safety net, because in any society, there's always going to be, the less fortunate who
Of course.
we just have to take care of. I mean, I think there is a moral imperative to give people basic healthcare, no question.
Do you think the solution to this, because I mean, getting rid of the middle one, of course, like that's true. It's way easier said than done. It just seems like more and more the solution is that physicians have to really take the bull by the horns and just go straight to market in terms of educating, the consumer more. Dr. Kristen Dickerson, she's a radiologist. She's very big on like transparent pricing for imaging and just showing like, hey, come here, you're gonna pay cash. This is how much it's gonna cost. If you go to the insurance company, this is what it's gonna cost. Do you feel like that's the key, is just educating the consumer so the consumer says like, yeah, you know what, screw this. I'm not going to my primary care thing. I know what the problem is. I'm just gonna go through this model, like, and I'm gonna pay out of pocket. Like, what do you think is gonna be the easiest way to get traction?
Well, I don't. I'm not sure the average American consumer is ready to do that yet. I don't know if things just have to get worse.
But
There's
just to
a colleague
interrupt,
of mine, my
you're
colleague, started a company called HealthMe, healthme.com, and it's basically you go on there and it's just okay. In this area, you need what they call like a shoulder package. So that would include a consult, X-ray for a set fee, and you know what it is. But I can tell you that's been slow to evolve.
But what about so but there's something here. So like with any technology, and this is been like my career's work, which is like early adoption, which is going to start with a small niche of people. It's not going to be the majority, right? But look
Right.
at if you look at like digital health for the mental health population, there's all these companies are coming out where I can go
Yeah.
sign up and I let's say you can get access to, let's say you have ADHD and you need Ritalin, right? Instead of constantly jumping around psychiatrists, you go through these companies. They have their providers and everything. Maybe that's the model. Is it possible? If that can be done in mental health, can it be done in things like, orthopedics, physical health, these kind of things? So like, for example, I'm a young, healthy guy. I don't have to go see an internist for anything, but the only thing that I would probably pay for is just some, access to, let's say, physical rehabilitation, orthopedics, because I'm young and I do a lot of sports and activities and stuff. Do you think maybe that's a potential model?
Well, there's many silver linings to the pandemic, right? I think many people will admit that. There's certain things that we're doing more efficiently. Certainly quality of life might improve. I think people are finding more balance. Those are all good things. But in terms of healthcare, we realized that a lot of stuff could be done remotely. A lot of my follow-ups can be done remotely. In the end, there are limitations in certain fields because if I can't examine your shoulder remotely. Now, I can answer questions, ask you questions, have you do an exam. You tell me where it's tender. If it's tender there, you have a bicep tendonitis. We could start a conservative treatment just like this. And if you don't get better, then we start spending the bucks, right? Then we know we need an MRI. Like, I know that from the get-go.
Let me ask you this. And I want to be mindful. You're okay in time?
Yeah. I've got to leave pretty soon because I've got this Society of Physician Entrepreneurs chapter meeting.
I know you're busy. We'll wrap up in a few, but just let me ask this question. So let's say again, like, you're right, the difference between mental health and, let's say, orthopedist said, like, you physically have to, check me, right? But there's plenty that can be done just through a patient encounter, just through your basic soap note, which without touching the patient, and let's say just having them administer the rotator, this is definitely a step one question, like the rotator cuff exercise to figure out like what tore. So let's say I'm a patient and I want to log in and talk to a doctor for 10 minutes to have them walk me through that. And I'm willing to pay cash just to do that versus, let's say, drive somewhere, et cetera, and you just tell me like, yeah, this sounds like it could be this, you should go here. But I'm just paying literally to talk to a doctor to do this. In your own clinic, what would the cost be to make that worth it? Like, first of all, how long would that be? Okay, I have a rotator cuff injury. I want to talk to Dr. Badia. You're going to walk me through, or one of your PAs, you walk me through the rotator cuff thing just for me to get feedback. Like, yeah, it sounds like a tear, or maybe you just need to rest it, right? How long would that take?
That's the beauty.
And what do I pay?
Yeah, that's the beauty of the subspecialist. That the subspecialist is going to know because that's what we see. So that's where the challenge is between the war between, the generalists and the primary care docs and the specialists I wrote an article in Doximity sometime that people were throwing barbs at me because I said in many cases it's just more cost effective to see the specialist because they know what questions to ask right away. They see this all the time. So something like that would maybe take me, no more than 7 or 8 minutes to at least get you started, ask the right questions, answer your questions. And, we could, probably do that for about $100. During the pandemic, we were charging only $25, but that was Ortho Now's way of helping the community. We felt like a lot of businesses were about to go under. So we said, we're just going to charge, $25. That really doesn't cover our costs, but it depends on what you're going to do, right? If you're going to review imaging studies, that takes more time, and we do that. At least I do that in my practice, and there's something called mymedicalimages.com. It's a cloud-based platform, and you can upload your MRI or plain x-rays into the cloud, and then I can it's free for physicians, so I can download that and look at your entire shoulder MRI just like this. And I do that every other day. I have, I think, one later today. So
do you think that maybe that's part of the solution? Yeah. But do you think that maybe that's part of the solution is that, like, for Ortho Now to, for physicians like yourself to team up, let's say, so you have Ortho Now, which is walk-in orthopedic. You have something like, I think it's called Green Imaging, Dr. Dickerson's clinic, which is like, transparent cash-based imaging. Do you think maybe that's the combination where it's like teaming up so that the patient's like, okay, I'm going to spend $200 or $300, but I'd rather do this because I'm going to go talk to Dr. Badia. Then they're going to tell me to go get my imaging. I go here, bring it back. That's what it sounds like. Cause I feel like putting the responsibility back on the consumer where they're paying out of pocket more specifically.
Otherwise it's
like, how much time do I have?
When I was an ER doc at the VA hospital, I used to have people come in with like a chest cold at 4 a.m. And the nurses were humane. They wouldn't wake me up because I was a surgical resident. So if something important came in, but they would, the patient would wait because they're, You're going to come in at 3 or 4 in the morning because you have a sore throat. That's just irresponsible. But why? Because they're not paying anything. And you know what? They're veterans. They shouldn't. So I think that's great. But we have to not abuse the system. And that's a problem sometimes with, you know, completely sort of socialized healthcare. If a patient has some responsibility of some that's commensurate maybe with what their income level is, then, you know, it's going to be better judicious use of healthcare. Not to mention the fact is that a lot of these chronic conditions are completely avoidable. Diet, exercise, not smoking, you know, checking with your primary care doctor, certain blood work and parameters, all those things downstream will save a lot of money. And when patients are on the hook for some of that, then they're going to be hopefully more responsible consumers of healthcare. And ultimately, that's what it's going to come. But I will tell you, Omar, a big part of OrthoNow is the digital health. Anybody listening to us could take 10 seconds. It's not as much fun as a wine or a dating app. I get that. But download OrthoNow and just surf the app and give us some feedback. Our website's orthonowcare.com.
I'll leave a link for that in the show notes.
The app has won several awards in digital health.
Fantastic. I'll leave the links in the show notes along with your social handles. Dr. Padilla, it's always a pleasure. We're definitely going to have you back on, but thanks for coming on and sharing your knowledge and your insights on this.
Thank you, Omar. A great opportunity to you know, try to solve this problem together, because that's what it's going to take.
Absolutely. Well, there's no doubt. I think that we can move the needle with physicians like yourself, you know, projecting your voice and more importantly, like inspiring other physicians to kind of team up, because this is a big problem that needs to be solved. So anyways, Dr. Padilla, thank you so much for joining us. Check the show notes below, everybody, and check out the OrthoNow app. Definitely go download it and just check it out. This is Omar Khatib, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The State of MedTech. I'm your host, Omar M. Khatib. Do us a favor, if you like this episode, share with somebody, and go ahead on Apple and Spotify, wherever you are, leave a 5-star review, type a few nice notes about us. This is how we get other people to find the show. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.